Our two stories today start in very similar ways. It is dark. A man facing great uncertainty and fear anxiously falls to the ground, seeking hope and reassurance. He knows the difficulty that is to come. He knows that he must find what he needs in this moment if he has any chance of moving forward. Our two stories today both start this way. Our first story is Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, as depicted in the largest of all of our stained glass windows. Most of you have never really seen this window. It's obscured by aged plexiglass on the outside and hidden away up in the balcony. After the service, I invite you to make your way up there and take a look at this beautifully hand-painted image, lit by the glow of the sun. When our bishop visited, Bishop Karen was just taken by this window as we stood here getting ready for things, and she named that window as one of the best perks of being in the choir. Because you get to sit and stare at this beautiful window. You know, Jesus was one who often turned to prayer, not simply in that garden that evening, but in so many quiet moments alone. Jesus went up on the mountain to pray many times in our scriptures. And I tell you, that's just what was told in our scriptures. He had much of his life that was undocumented, and he was certainly filled with many other moments of prayer and time away. But the prayer, the moment portrayed in our window, is one of the most poignant and powerful of his life. To set this scripture appropriately in time, I need to acknowledge that I have taken things out of order. Today's scripture is 12 days early. Next Sunday, we are going to celebrate Jesus' arrival into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday. There will be hosannas and cheers and shouts. It's the beginning of Holy Week. And then during Holy Week, Jesus will preach and teach. He will confront the establishment. He will push boundaries. And then he will gather his disciples for the Passover, a day we recognize as Maundy Thursday. A week and a half from now, we will gather in this room and we will hear the story of that night and celebrate once again the Last Supper. I cannot adequately express my hope that you will make time for that special service. Holy Week is a very important moment. And then after this Last Supper, after the breaking of the bread, after Jesus washes his disciples' feet, they gather together, they leave that upper room, and they head to the garden. The scripture we hear today takes place as that night, Maundy Thursday, turns into the next day, Good Friday. This prayer happens following the Last Supper as the day turns into the very day of Jesus' death. And as that night reaches its darkest, Jesus, facing great uncertainty and fear, anxiously falls to the ground seeking hope and reassurance. He knows the difficulty that is to come. He knows that he must find what he needs in that moment if he has any chance of moving forward. Hear the story as the Gospel of Matthew tells it. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane. He said to his disciples, "Stay here while I go over and pray." He took Peter and Zebedee's two sons with him, and he began to feel sad and anxious. So he said to them, "I'm very sad. It's as if I'm dying. Stay here and keep alert with me." Then he went a short distance further and fell on his face and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, take this cup of suffering away from me. However, not what I want, but what you want." He came back to the disciples and he found them asleep. He said to Peter, "Couldn't you stay alert for 1 hour with me? Stay alert and pray so that we won't give in to temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." A second time, Jesus went away and prayed, "My Father, if it's not possible that this cup be taken away unless I drink it, then let it be what you want." Again, Jesus returned and found them sleeping. Their eyes were heavy with sleep, so he left them again and went and prayed the same words for a third time. Then he came to all of his disciples and he said to them, Will you sleep and rest all night? Look, the time has come for the human one to be betrayed into the hands of those that persecute him. Get up. Let's go. Look, here comes my betrayer. As we hear this story, it is easy to forget that the disciples had no clue what was about to happen. Not for trying. Jesus had been alluding to it over and over. Sometimes he outright just said it, and they just weren't hearing. They had no clue what was about to happen. They haven't heard the story year after year. To them, this is just another Passover night, and Jesus just wants a little extra prayer. Oh, that Jesus, always with the prayer. They do not know the anguish with which Jesus is wrestling. He tries to express it. He does his best to put the unspeakable into words. How could he even express what he's feeling, even if he could fully understand it? "I'm very sad," he says. "I feel like I'm dying." He says it so unironically, it circles all the way back around to be ironic again. "I feel like I'm dying." Yet as far as they know, he's just going to pray. But Jesus isn't just saying bedtime prayers with sleepy disciples all around him. The only begotten Son of God is confronting the full depth of his humanity as he confronts his own death. Jesus, depicted in our stained glass window, kneeling against a rock, looking up into the sky, begins to petition the divine source of which he is a part. He questions God. Does it have to be this way? He questions himself. Can I really do this? He questions those who love him, those he loves himself. Why can't you be the support I need right now? This is one of Jesus' most relatable and human moments, because these are human questions. At some point in time, these are our questions. Our Christian tradition has given a name to moments such as these. Moments in which we feel distant and lost from the divine presence. Moments in which we cannot even begin to describe the heartbreak within. We use the term dark night of the soul. It is this darkness that pushes against our Lenten theme of sharing the light within. Here we are seeking to share the light, and here is this dark night of the soul. How can we share the light in such moments? When darkness not only surrounds us, but feels as if it is consuming us. When the only thing we have for God besides questions is our anger. When we doubt our own ability to make it through the day. Not even just through the day. When we doubt our own ability to make it through minutes or mere seconds ahead of us. When the people who should be there to support and care for us cannot understand what we were encountering and seem to disappoint us at every turn. How can we share light in such moments? I don't always know if we can. We can't always share light in such moments. But we can always carry it. Our two stories today start in very similar ways. It's dark. A man facing great uncertainty and fear anxiously falls to the ground, seeking hope and reassurance. He knows the difficulty that is to come. He knows that he must find what he needs in this moment if he has any chance of moving forward. Our two stories today both start this way. Our second story is the story of an indigenous nomad who faced the reality that life and environment have once again forced him to change everything, leaving behind the warmth and safety of the camp and fire he has called home since the last time everything around him fell apart. Knowing he may only take what he can carry into the cold, dark night ahead of him, he heads to the fire. A fire that has brought life through warmth and safety and food. And he begins to disrupt the flames and wood. He cannot carry this fire with him. And as the flames die out, he looks to the orange-red glow of the ground. embers of what had been. From his pocket, he takes out a handful of nature, moss and leaves. He carefully places an ember inside that slightly damp moss and then wraps the leaves around it, tight enough to keep the ember safe, but loosely enough to allow that essential air to keep it alive. Then he places this wrapped treasure in his pocket. An ember, the glowing coal that it is, carries within it all of the energy and potential of the fire from which it was born. But through a balance of density and surface area, it does not burn, it smolders. The energetic reaction taking place at a very conserving pace. When our nomad has made it through the night and the day to come, when he has journeyed through the difficulties that surround him and arrives at a new place, he will open the leaves and gently place that ember amidst new kindling. And then he will breathe. Ever so gently, he will breathe and bring that ember back to life until the light once again comes forth, sharing with the world around him. It was not shining when he carried it, as he held it so cautiously and lovingly and hopefully. But it shines again. He has brought the light with him and carried it through breath back to life. And here our stories converge once more. Jesus is so authentic in his praying. God, I don't want it to be this way. But if it is, please help me through. Carry me and be with me. In that moment of prayer, Jesus is holding in his palm the gentle glow of his soul. A glow that has shone so brightly and illuminated so many lives. A light that has shown its beauty in the most difficult of times. A light that finds itself stilled to an ember. He holds it in his prayerful hands and invites God to help him carry it through the darkness to come, trusting with hope that God will breathe new life into it once again. In this way, we too are carried through the darkest of times. The ember of our souls in the very hands of God, held closely with a trusting hope that knows we will shine again, receiving a breath of life from the Spirit. Breathe on me, breath of God. Bring me to life once more. This ember you carry needs your love to share all it has in store.